This feature has been brought to you by Slot Foundation, which needs your support to continue projects like these. Information on this recording and access to other recordings is available online at slot.org.
So many questions to ask, so many things to talk about. Maybe we could just start with that question that Matruya ended with, which is, who was the anthropologist and what was she studying, right? Are you the anthropologist and what are you studying? But I think beyond that too, that you, Bea, have written about your view of art as a kind of ritual, right? And about the camera itself as a ritual object. There, of course, citing the anthropologist filmmaker Jean Rouch, and this tradition, right, of French filmmaking. So maybe saying a little bit about anthropology, art as ritual, with respect to Matruya, but also thinking about the film we opened with, La Cabeza Mató a Todo, where the film itself seems to be very much like a spell, right, where music and movement seems key to this spell, and it really got me thinking about what do we need art for, especially at this moment in time, right? What do we need art spells against? Big questions.
Okay, there's a few questions in there.
Yeah.
Right. So who is the anthropologist and what is she studying? So it's, of course, an accident that I asked that, and it got no answer, but it was the perfect refusal for me to be confronted with, because it is one of the works that I've made in which it is most in the observational ethnographic mode. And so I thought it was beautiful and appropriate that he set the limits for that, and also that it is a repetition in his life of a previous event, that he knows it well, and so he knows where to draw the line. So he's not, for me, all that is in there, you know? He's not an innocent performing for the camera. He knows what I'm doing, and he knows what he's doing as well, and he draws the line of how far I can go, and how, and in that way, he has some control over his own subjectivity or how it is represented. So I wanted that to be in the work. And so, I mean, I think that it's, for me, that process of observation and being in a place or with a group of people or with a person for a long time is very important, but it also carries a lot of intrusion with it. And other things as well. So the anthropologist is, obviously I'm not actually an anthropologist, but it does, that way of looking carries that way of thinking with it. So I'm the anthropologist, and I'm also, you know, carrying this other memory of another anthropologist who took the photograph. And then you were also talking about ritual. So what I think is interesting about thinking about the camera as a ritual object is, once you think about it in this way, then you can understand the entire cinematic process as one whole thing. So not just as the moment when you screen an image and its relationship to an audience, but everything that happens from the moment that you pull out a camera, just even the way that you start thinking differently, because you start carrying with you the entire archive of cinema and images that you have in your mind. So you are seeing always through it, even when you're not looking through it. And then the person that is in front of you is also reacting to all of their imagination of what is possible in everything that is cinema. And in the same way, this is what I try to do with thinking about the the cinema in the military base. Mm-hmm. Just asking very basic questions. So what is the cinema that is possible here? Where is the light coming from? What kinds of images is it creating? What is the object in that is the obstacle between the light and the screen? And this is because it's not gratuitous. It is because when you are in this military base that was there for 60 years, it becomes very, very difficult to see anything except the ruin of a military base. And then even when you are looking at it from a critical viewpoint, you are reproducing the image constantly. All you see is the footprint. So because you have that way of looking already ingrained in you, you have to trick and break your mind and break your camera constantly and try to see differently. With it. It's not easy because we are all already trained to have that drone image of the world in us. So this post-military cinema, that film, is part of a series of works that I made in the base, just trying to think beyond that way of producing images, really putting obstacles in front of myself in order to be able to see differently. Sometimes just, you know, working with sound as well. I made a recording. I made recordings there and in an active military base in Scotland. That is where a lot of the operations of Ceiba and Vieques moved to once Vieques closed. And it's interesting because you may think when you're standing in the base, you think of it as something that is closed or shut down, but in fact, when you listen to it, it's just a din of activity because there are many, many events that you cannot recognize, that you don't have a name for, but and that maybe are in a scale of, you know, 60 years or 80 years. So actually, it's much louder to be at the closed and inactive base than to be in fast lane, which is like, you know, these like constant mechanic sound effects. So there was a third question in there. ritual.
Art spells.
So Michelle Nonon, who is the woman that appears in La Cabeza Mató a Todos, is a good friend, somebody that I've worked with for a while, an artist, theater performer, and also farmer, informal educator. I mean, she's, in a way, I made the work for her, with her, mm-hmm. about the kind of work that she makes and also about her presence and what the meaning of androgyny as a symbolic thing. So I was trying to think about how. So yes, art may work in the realms of the symbolic, but so does politics. So any kind of work that takes on new ways of thinking in that symbolic sphere. Is operating in the same at the same level, art, spell, political speech. It's all works within the same sphere. So I was trying to think about the specific things that make make the work. The you know in a spell, if you want someone to fall in love with you, perhaps. Having that person fall in love with you is not within the what seems is not does not seem accessible to you. It would require a certain kind of work, so you replace it with another kind of work, and it's not easy. It's never easy the work that you have to replace it with. You have to replace it with something that perhaps is you know finding a route that is very difficult to find or getting hair of the person while they're sleeping. None of these things are easy. So you replace one kind of work with another kind of work, but it's not an easier way of doing it. It's just a different kind of work that takes all of that intention and puts it into another material. And so art works a lot in the same way. Or at least for me it does. And in that way, this is the way that I think form and the sensorial have an equal and powerful weight.
Thanks. Yeah, this question of the work of art and also the collaborative mode of producing that work that mm-hmm. I think you're gesturing toward makes me think about this question of poetics, right? And a documentary poetics, if we can call it that. And I was thinking about this conversation in terms of the title of tonight's program, which has a kind of three-part subheading. So Island Galaxies and the Post-Colony, the title, and then Caribbean Documentary Poetics, number one, Feminism, number two, and Collective Art Practice, number three. So with respect to this question of documentary poetics, as I was watching your films, I was really thinking about this category that Donna Haraway, the feminist eco-critic, has recently written about that she calls sympoiesis. So not just poiesis, the act of making, but the act of collectively producing systems through sympoiesis, where she really talks about how we make with mm-hmm. right, other species, and that it's important to acknowledge interspecies intimacies, especially with respect to things like environmental disasters, right? With colonial regimes and post-colonial regimes, to be able to be in the moment, to have an awareness of the past, perhaps a dread of or preparation for the future, but to be very much with, making with others. And that's the only way we can really think about not falling into the trap of either nostalgia or victimhood, but some mode of partial recuperation. That's how she puts it, and getting on with each other, right? So I felt like sympoiesis was a good term to describe the kinds of human-plant encounters in your films, especially because you seem to embrace an improvisational style too, and we can just think about cat and human, beekeeper, spiders, tree frogs that become a soundtrack, celluloid even, that are in these environments. And I wonder if that concept of sympoiesis resonates with you at all, or if you could talk a little bit about, even let's take Michel Nonneau and the cat, mm-hmm. right? Whose point of view starts the film, whose voice, how you're trying to see when you're breaking that frame that you were mm-hmm. talking about, and maybe the relationship between cat and human that you're going for yeah. when you're filming.
I guess these works specifically. The reason why I was so interested in Pablo Diaz Cuadrado, for example, in Matrulla, yeah. is because through making another film, I was looking for a certain route that I couldn't find anywhere, and everybody kept saying, the only person I can imagine would know is Pablo Diaz Cuadrado. You have to go up to Orocovis and find him, and you know, he never answers his phone. And and then he told me the story about having had this hallucinogenic trip with those flowers that appear in the beginning, the Brugmansia versicolor. They're the ones that they have many different names. And having seen his future in this place, having seen his future life and house, he built it. So this is I was really just thinking about him thinking with the plant, no? And then when I was looking for his house, I've had the right road, I had the kilometer, and I kept going back and forth and back and forth, and I couldn't find it because the house was so in the mountain. The side of his house is the mountain itself with rocks put into it. And he really thinks with the plants. I mean, I think about thinking with the plants. And he thinks with them. Everything he does, and even this chaotic space, really is not chaotic. It's quite organized according to what the plants need. And he is a true rear guard visionary, you know, the person that is back there taking everything that is being like falling, being left behind, and turning it into something that into something else, which I'm really attracted to, this idea of this all of our detritus being transformed into other ways of thinking. So he's, mm-hmm. I think, he's the example of thinking with the plants, and I am a city girl who just maybe 15 years ago learned to differentiate different species because I had a job drawing native plants. And so I learned quite slowly. But I am interested in this more than thinking with plants. I have been thinking with people and really about what it means to see with someone. And also to make work not about something or about a place or about someone, but make it with them and for them, so that if they are the most profound thinkers of their own state, I am making work for that work for him, mm-hmm. so that it works at his level of complexity of thinking, so that he and I are thinking together. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So this is something also that has to do with, like, why does the work do one thing and not others? Why does the work not explain? Why is it, you know, why does it... for me, this is also what means to think. Because I'm, in a very practical way, trying to figure out how to create images and ways of thinking that are for us, that work for us in a way that... the images that the military and the service industry and sort of nostalgic images of Puerto Rico and all of the Caribbean have created that are ingrained in our minds and that we have to break out of in order to be able to see differently. I'm not trying to create images that explain anything, but rather figuring out what kind of work and image making can help us create different ways of thinking together?
Yeah.
So this is what, I guess, thinking with... Also, I think that... I mean, this is something maybe common sense, but it's worth saying it, that you think differently in different places.
Yes.
So I'm sure all of you had the experience, just like you think differently with someone else, or you might behave differently. You start, you know... The ways of thinking that are possible in one place are not possible in another. And so for me, it was, even though I was educated in the United States and, you know, learned all my film theory and my formation is School of the Art Institute of Chicago, which is like the global universal version of art history, which, you know, everybody gets the same one. Once I was in Puerto Rico, I realized that there are many things that simply could not apply. And although, unless I was looking or thinking at ground level and doing some basic ground level apperception, I was not going to be able to really see. This really see is a weird, you know, way of talking about it, but, you know, you have certain structures in your mind, certain things have names. And the ones that you can't recognize as a form, you don't see. So there's a process that you have to go through to begin, you know, throwing things out in order to be able to see others.
Yeah, I mean, I know that you've mentioned several sites, and mm-hmm. your work is very site specific, right? Mm-hmm. So. You were talking about Vieques, mm-hmm. And I'd love to hear a little bit more about your collective art practice and the practices of walking, the walking sessions that you lead through Beta Local, so maybe talking a little bit about that, but some of the work you've been doing in these heavily contaminated spaces like Vieques, right, where you had U.S. bombing, U.S. naval bombing sites for 60 years or so, and even though the bombing has stopped, there's so much contamination still, coupled with, as we were talking about earlier, this massive tourist industry of building of high-rises, even as the economic crisis has been driving people away, right, in terms of their livelihoods in Puerto Rico, you also have this influx of a certain kind of new money with continued military presence on the base, of course. So maybe you could just, before we open it up for questions, talk a little bit about how you work with other artists through Beta Local and walking, especially walking through spaces and finding sites to make projects about through walking.
So at some point I was like, I think this happened in a class that I was teaching for a day, someplace that I was invited. Somebody, like a student in the audience, asked me what the relationship between, this is my baby, 6 or 7 years ago, what the relationship between my work, the way that I do my work, and my pedagogic practice was, and I had to be like, oh, none. Absolutely none. I teach, like, you know, when I teach in a classroom with a projector, we read some texts, we talk about some movies. Really, like, how could I possibly transmit at least a way of working, no? So I started thinking about then what the a seminar, a course in which we were doing what I try to do normally, which is just, I guess, be in the world and wait for a long time for things to happen. So the seminars are usually about 3 weeks long, and we walk from one place to another. Usually they've been along the coast in Puerto Rico, so, you know, camping out in hammocks at night. And so so they're international. I mean, they're open to anybody that wants to come. The ones that I've organized in Vieques have been most heavily Puerto Rican participants because there was a lot of interest, and also because, you know, the civil disobedience movement, which was like between 2000 and 2003, a lot of people who were like in between 17 and 24 years old, so in college then, participated as civil disobedience. So in, like, you know, Occupy, like protest, you know? And then once the military left in 2003, had no more contact with Vieques. So this community of people that had been civil disobedience is kind of coextensive with the art community. So there were a lot of people within the art community that wanted to participate because they had been civil disobedience many years before. So, it's a complicated story, but during the sessions, these seminars, there's maybe three different kinds of things happening at the same time. On the one hand, we're sort of dealing with the sort of what the material reality of the place tells you about the history and the politics and everything that has produced it. On the other hand, we're also walking for 3 weeks, so our body is changing, so the instrument with which we perceive is changing, and you start sensing things that you wouldn't sense otherwise. It's sort of like, you know, you're walking for 10 hours and like nothing happens, everything changes. You are walking through places that you really don't have access to unless you're on foot. Even, you know, we had somebody on a horse that was coming with us, and, you know, he couldn't walk more than 5 hours with us before he had to leave us. A horse can't go the same places that a person on foot can go in. And then there's a third level, which is where most of us are artists or writers or people involved in some kind of creative endeavor, and so we're constantly thinking about the relationship between the place and our work and kind of that process of translation, and sometimes transformation that can happen in the process of making work, writing. And so all those things are happening at the same time. Right now, with like we've gone to, even though the seminar is organized as something that happens every year and in different parts of the island, it's turned out that we've gone to Vieques many times because the place, you know, there's all these possible collaborations that call you to it. There's an archive that needs not just a lot of, you know, archive work happening in it, but also the people that run the archive are interested in artists coming in and doing work out of the archive. There's a anti-military radio station that was started by civil disobedience there a few years back. And there's many other things happening. So we've, that group that initially went to Vieques as part of the seminar has, we've sort of organized ourselves to come back again and again. And now we're continuing to produce projects in the place collaboratively but autonomously. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if that, you know, it's kind of like we're doing it, we're paying attention to each other, and we each collaborate on each other's projects, but there's some, you know, autonomy within each project, and also with a lot of direction on the part of the people that run the archive, run the military station, the anti-military radio station, etc. It's a complicated project to talk about. I mean, I can talk about it more if there are questions, yeah. But I feel like just to, you know, that might give a general idea yeah. of what it is.
Yeah, I think we should open it up for questions. So there are some microphones. I think there's one in the back that can be passed around, but comments, questions, observations for Bea.
Thank you very much. I wanted to ask you particularly about the second film. I was struck by the ways in which the images that were produced were giving us what appeared to me to be a natural cinema, in the sense that the screens that are usually the constructed kind of human screens that one would watch became the doors themselves, the back of what appeared to be one of the seats in the cinema. And that the light was then the projected light that was coming through and is filtered through the smoke and whatnot, as if you were then staging a kind of history of this particular cinema, meaning the theater, but nested within a history of a natural cinema or a natural ecology, mm-hmm. of which it is only a figment, creating a kind of historicity that is almost the inverted historicity of what one would expect. Meaning instead of having this military base that's no longer there, it's that the military base in its history is infinitesimal in relationship to the natural history of images and sounds. Mm-hmm. And so I was wondering if that was the case, and if so, could you say a little bit more about that? And more pointedly, I was wondering what the political stakes of doing this are, particularly given, obviously, it's a military base, and the ways in which you depict it is that it seems as if that's the zone of policed images and sounds, and that you're breaking quite radically with that, particularly with the opening, with the doors that are opened and then closed, and showing that perhaps there's a different relationship to sounds and images outside of their militarized policing.
Mm-hmm. There was a moment when I was beginning to make this work in the base. As I said, it's part of many other different projects that I was trying to do this. How about this? How about this? How about this? To see differently in this way. I had a conversation with somebody that was studying secondary forests in Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico has become a laboratory for secondary forests because of its history. Diverse culture, monoculture, military base, and then all of this industry and agriculture stops, and you have Ceiba, this place where I shot, military base, next to a rainforest that has a much more diverse. So now it's this kind of laboratory. This person said to me, in 60 years, a secondary forest is indistinguishable from a primary forest, not in its diversity, but in its population, no? In its, so this is the first moment that I started thinking that the heaviness which I was perceiving, the military ruin, was not allowing me to see the larger event, which is the 60-year event that we're already one-tenth of the way towards recovering, which is the forest. And then that's when I was able to walk into the cinema and go and see, also talking to people around the base who were dismayed that the base was not being cut down like it used to be, and thinking, aha, so this is one of the transformations that has happened. Now we have a forest around the base, and the cinema allows us to see it, to see this new event that perhaps would have been invisible if you don't think of it in that scale of time. So yes, for me it's very, like, everything you said, you got it. It's like, this is what I was thinking. Especially in terms of time scale and and being able to think, if I can see these 60 years past so clearly, how can I see the 60 years future? What kind of mechanisms, no? Symbolic or ideological, even mythologies can I use to be able to see something that this footprint is not allowing me to see? And it's quite practical, this. I mean, it's like something we really need, because the only images that have ever been produced of this place, of this past 100 years, are military images, are images of domination. And now we have put that into our heads, and we continue to see things in this kind of drone mentality. So, and then the last part of your question was quite complicated, and I didn't understand. So maybe you could.
Well, the easy version is, what are the political implications of thinking of images in this way, or constructing a film in this way?
And
I was just interested more specifically in the ways in which it seems like you are dismantling the various ways in which images and sounds are framed, mm-hmm. and thereby resisting, I mean, I was thinking in the back of my mind, the long history of the relationship between the military and the cinema, and how the framing and capturing of particular targeted images, mm-hmm. the rendering invisible of large swaths of the population and things like this. And so I was just wondering if you could speak a bit more about what the political implications are.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'll talk about it in really basic terms. When, right now, the military has left in 2003. The forest has grown. The people whose land was right before the land was expropriated, this land for the past 15 or 20 years had been given to mostly black farmers who for the first time were given land as part of an agricultural reform, but were not given titles, so that they would not sell the land. But then when the US military came and asked for the land for common defense, they were just expropriated after 10, 15 years of working the land without any compensation. And literally the stories that people would tell is of being, you know, their houses torn down, burnt down, and being pushed outside of the perimeter of what then became the base with stacks of plywood for them to build their new houses. Another film that I made was with a man called Pedro Ortiz, who is lives in the house that his grandparents built when they were thrown out of that land. So these people that are there now are watching the government, the central government, and the military trying to figure out what to do with this land now. No? And the structures are so colossal, so monumental, that the only thing that the government and developers can imagine is something equally colossal and monumental. Mm-hmm. So luxury, yachts, a resort. So really the scale, the footprint of the place itself, and the way it has been imagined makes other kinds of possibilities invisible. And the people that are that live near there are slowly, for the past two or three years, have been breaking the gates and going in and fishing and looking and seeing what kind of animals have been getting inside the base. There are bats living inside the California bungalows. There are manatees coming back into the base that used to house submarines. They know the names of the place. They know where the lemon sharks are. They're all of this, they know, and they are knowing again, no, by going in. So for me, I was trying to think like the fisherman. No, here he is making this dock that takes 10 minutes to walk. You know, just that's just gigantic. That's where the carriers used to dock. And he is standing at the dock and fishing like a shore fisherman. He is turning the dock again into a shore, just reducing the scale, folding. So this, I was thinking with him, no? Thinking with him and trying to think about then how to create the change the symbolic presence of this land so that another possibility emerges. So for me, it's very, it's quite direct and practical, even though it's a poetic process. No? I think that, I mean, I got a hold of a CD full of high-resolution images that when the base closed, they had held a party for community members that they felt had been very supportive of the military base in order to say goodbye. And as a present, they had given this CD out with these high-res images, historical images of 60 years of the base there. They're amazing. The domination of the aerial photography is even in like the pictures mm-hmm. Of the soldiers. Huh? Up to a certain point, they're almost beautiful images, mm-hmm. no? Because they're hiring professional photographers and doing amazing technical work. Not only were they producing these kinds of images and circulating an image of the land unable to be separated from the military presence, but they were also not allowing others to see, period. You could not get in and take an image. Nobody for 60 years saw the bombing of Vieques, really the effect of it, until there was an open commission and an investigation and a committee that had the Archbishop and the Secretary of State in a helicopter looking down. And this is an amazing moment. I remember watching this, watching in the helicopter the an image of the Archbishop and the Secretary of State, Norma Burgos, and somebody else, and the Admiral, saying, look at the bombing of Vieques, and saying, see, it's a normal bombing range, it's what would happen anyway, and the camera is on the Archbishop and the Secretary of State, and they begin to cry, because they had never seen an image of this, and they're for the first time seeing what 60 years of bombing has done to this land. So really, visibility, it was so important. They knew it was important to be able to see. So, okay, it's a long answer to, I think it is quite important.
I mean, what you're talking about too is it's a politics of opacity in some ways. I mean, Bea has written, and I'll quote Bea, about these aerial photographs, military photographs, the transparency is the masters, the forest is the maroons. To see the future of the place rather than the ruin of the military past, one must look from the ground level, let the forest grow back, block the transparency, collapse, misunderstand, constantly change position, listen to the noise without trying to hear the signal. And I think that speaks to this question of the politics. We do need to, I wanted to leave enough time for the next screening, and we'll have some time after to talk more. But we're going to shift gears a little bit from Puerto Rico to some of your work in Haiti, and we're going to end with this 15-minute film that was shot in Port-au-Prince. It's called Marché Salomon, and the idea of the galaxy reemerges here, which I think for me actually connects to that nocturnal galaxy of La Cabeza Mató. So maybe you want to say a few words, Bea, about the kids you worked with in this market and why you started filming there, how you started filming there, and then we'll screen it and
I was invited by some really amazing writers and theater people in Haiti to come to a festival that they organized there, the Quatre Chemins Festival. It was the first time that they organized it when I went and made Nocturne. They wanted to make the theater festival very interdisciplinary, and they knew that I worked with non-actors in a kind of improvisational way. So they asked me. So I made a first work in 2015, yes, and then another one in 2016 when they invited me a second time. When I was there the first time, I kept thinking, I went to the market a lot, and I kept thinking that it would be impossible to make a work in the market for many different reasons that I can talk about later. And then when they called me and they said, do you know what you would want to do if you came again? And I said, yes, film in the market. So it's like setting out the most difficult thing. But also, for me, it was the most interesting. I had been thinking a lot about mysticism and in the ways in which there's a debate, an argument between transcendence and immanence that recurs in many different mystical practices, and how it manifests itself in Vodun and in popular culture in the market through materials. And I spent some days there just talking to people, and eventually, as with what usually happens with the people that I work with, Mado Shelan and Marcelan, who both worked in the meat market section of the market, sort of appeared and said, we're interested in doing this. And so this is the work that is the result of that process. Great.
This is about just thinking of something that has been haunting me in the third film of the previous set, where forget his name. Pablo. He says, if you've changed, unless you change everything, you've changed nothing. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted you to sort of just talk to me about that sentence and just reflect on it, how it's in a way speaks to a lot of the things that you were talking about earlier. But in a way, it seems like coming from a completely different place. It seems like a worldview which could be quite antithetical to the way that you're thinking yourself about your practice, about these films, which leads me, of course, to a very crude question, which is that, however from the ground up that you're looking, whatever subaltern view that you're embodying in the films, precisely because of the other view, the macro view, what you call the drone view, which has become very much part of modern consciousness, what do you do with accessibility? I mean, these are philosophical, poetic pieces, and unfortunately, that way of seeing is no longer necessarily what is the most accessible precisely to the people that are not perhaps the individuals represented, but, in general. So I wanted to carry on talking about the art form as in viewing, as in circulation of that art object and so on.
Yeah.
Not just the making of it.
It's a
huge question again, but...
Hard question. I think that there's like a generous to myself way of answering it and then a not-so-generous way. I mean, it's the things that I think about as well and that I don't really have answers to. But I'd say that that thinking about it generously, that if you think about it as like a concentric circles, and the most important person to the work is the person that I'm making it with, and they get it and understand it, and we're thinking together. And then as you go further and further away, there's less and less understanding because you have less context, because the place, you don't recognize it immediately, or it doesn't mean anything to you, or, you know, you're looking at an image of the topography of Vieques, and, you know, somebody that's from there would recognize it and know what it means, but nobody else does. I mean, as it gets further and further, it gets further away from the possibility of it doing something else. I don't think it's work that can have a kind of massive audience. I don't know if that is a goal that I can have for it. I don't mind that it doesn't so much. Like, the most important thing is that this smaller circle that is looking at it and what it does and what might making work for that person or group of people do. Then, in another way, you could say that it does have an audience, that then it travels within art circles, museum, gallery, etc., and then it acquires a different kind of meaning. That sometimes can get close to where it's trying to go, but many times it doesn't. And with that, that's the work to be done. It's like the, you know, the questions that keep you up at night kind of thing, you know. I don't really have,
It's an unfair question in some ways, but I still wanted
it's a fair question. It's the question that everybody should ask themselves. I mean, in an extremely utopian way, I want the work to be able to build for itself a different way of looking at art. Ideally, it wouldn't need to circulate within spaces in which it's simply consumed, or where the spectator is the most important part of the equation. It would be a different kind of process. I mean, in which perhaps the idea of audience or spectator wouldn't even be required, and where all the weight of the work would be in the making of it. But that is a different, it's a very different philosophical structure that is not the aesthetic. So for now, the work tries to build one way of existing while inhabiting the other.